There is an absolute silent killer of deals. There is this part of the sales cycle where we are completely vulnerable. And the worst part of it is that it's a silent killer, meaning we never see it coming. So today we're going to talk about what it is, how to identify it, and most importantly, what you can do about it. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we begin, as usual, I have actually today two really cool freebies for you guys. So here we are. It's the end of May. 1 month from now, we're going to be like right at that halfway point of the year. So in order to give you a jump on that, I have two very cool freebies, if I didn't mention that already. Did I mention that I had two cool freebies for you guys? Well, if you go to YourSalesPlaybook.com/checklist, YourSalesPlaybook.com/checklist, you're going to be able to get both of these freebies. Now, the first freebie is a checklist, right? That's kind of like the name of the URL that I just gave you, right? And I created this checklist based on the qualities of rock star salespeople. And right about now, when we're coming up on that halfway point of the year, it would be just an awesome time for you to take a look in the mirror and look at like the different qualities that we know that we all need to have and rate yourself on a scale from 1 to 10. And what's important about this exercise is that it's going to be an eye-opener for you. It's going to show you some areas that maybe you're not performing at like the level that you should to have that kick-ass year that you like set for it to have like on January 1st of the year. So we'll talk about all those types of things in the checklist, and it's there for you. And I think that's important that you identify the areas that you want to improve upon, because, I mean, we're supposed to be humble students of sales. At least that's what I'm trying to preach on this podcast and over on my blog and all the things that I do. And in order to do that, we really need to know the areas that might need a little bit of love. So that's the first freebie for you. The second freebie is I put together a free guide on how to hire a sales coach, because some of you might be kind of on the fence. Yeah, I'm thinking about getting a sales coach. I don't know. There's a lot of bullshit artists out there. What do I do? What do I say? How do I weed out the BS from the legit? Well, have no fear. I put together a guide for you that just takes you through questions that you should be asking these people and things you should be considering. And this way, it hopefully will help you a bit to make a more informed decision. So again, to get the free checklist, to get the free How to Hire a Sales Coach guide, all you have to do is visit yoursalesplaybook.com/checklist and it's all yours from there. So having said that, I think that's more than enough time that we just killed here away from the main event, which today we're going to be talking about how every sales cycle has a danger zone. Now I'm going to just like let the cat out of the bag, and many of you are going to want to say duh, but before you say duh, I want you to seriously ask yourself a question. Like, am I saying duh because like I'm all over this shit? Or am I saying duh because I'm a wuss and like it's easier for me to say duh and that's basic and that sells a 101 than getting off my ass and actually doing what Castain is talking about? So you ready? The most vulnerable point of any sales cycle, it actually exists throughout the entire sales cycle, and it's that period of time between meetings. Now, why would I say that? Well, now it's very awkward for me to ask myself a question like, why would I say that? And then I answer my effing question. I feel like I don't know. Like, it's just odd, man. It's a weird dynamic. So whatever. I just thought I'm an open book. I like to share this kind of stuff with you guys. So the reason why it's a dangerous point for us, is because when you're having a meeting, whether it be face-to-face or it be on a phone or a WebEx or whatever, you can usually gauge their interest level. Chances are, even though their mind and attention span, it could be all over the damn place, a good portion of that attention now is on you. But between meetings, now they've got all the distractions. And you know that distractions, and especially the world that we're living in, a new bright shiny object comes around and it could kill the whole momentum of that deal. And by the way, and those of you who are listening in a sales meeting right now, this might get weird. So nobody look at your sales manager when I ask this question. But have you ever worked for somebody that they were all over the damn place? It's like, this week we're focusing on this and everybody's got to do this and we're going to do this little fire drill to make sure everybody's doing it. And then next week it's a completely different thing. The week after it's a new flavor. The week after that, you know, it's this or whatever. I mean, they're all over the damn place. And that can happen a lot with high-level decision makers. In fact, this may sound weird, but there's many of us who would argue that that is actually one of the qualities of some really successful people, is that like they're all over the damn place, but I mean they actually execute. So there's a difference between being all over the damn place and just like not getting anything done, and being all over the damn place and like actually executing. So you're also in danger between meetings, because you might have other influencers now whispering in your prospect's ear. And what I mean by other influencers, sometimes it could be as subtle as that person who is either in that meeting and really, really quiet, or maybe someone else, a stakeholder that you didn't get access to for whatever reason, whispering in their ear and influencing them in a different direction. Other times, it could be a competitor. And sometimes when it's a competitor, they might be whispering things in your prospect's ears that take them completely away from you and your solutions, and they're influencing them away from you. So there's a whole mess of stuff that can happen. So how do we stay in touch during this period of time in a way that's not very, very typical? So what I did was I put together 6 very quick suggestions for you. Most of these I'm going to be teaching you how to fish rather than fill your tummy with like some food today. But, there, you know, because I have a heart, I'm also going to feed you a little too. So your Uncle Paul's got you covered. So the first thing really is a question that I want you to ask yourself. And the question is, with every single deal, you need to ask this: in what ways can I stay in touch without the typical calling to check in, calling to follow up? Mostly calling to check in, because that is just, to me, something that has had the ever-living shit beaten out of it. It is just so typical. And your job is not to be typical. In fact, every time I say that, I think of this quote that I believe Jack Welch said, but the problem is, I really can't confirm it anymore. I remember at the time when I heard it, I had read Jack Welch said this, and I just wanted to be sure because I really wanted to use it, and I just haven't had anything, and Jack Welch isn't returning my calls. Like, what a dick, right? He's not calling me back. So if any of you know Jack Welch, just say, hey, man, could you, like, get back to Paul here. I mean, he's trying to ask you a question, and now you're just being rude, man. And say it like that to him. Now you're just being rude. So I believe he once said that your job is not to be rude. Your job is not to be rude. Do you see what just happened there? And here's the best part. I could easily edit it out. I'm not going to, because I don't want to spend time on that kind of shit. So there you go. I mean, it's there. I mean, who knows? You know, the older I get, man, some real wacky shit's going to happen. Like, I'm going to fall down. You know, I might, like, you know, I don't know, like, mess up my lines or whatever when I get really old or whatever. I mean, who knows, man? I might lose control, and I don't know. But I'm not editing it out. But Jack Welch, let's go back to this, right? Take 2. Jack Welch said something along the lines of, your job is not to be boring. If you're boring, slap yourself. Now, I don't want you guys to slap yourself, but man, I mean, I don't want you to be typical. The problem is that, like, to, like, most buyers that are out there, we all sound the same. We really do. And it's the same, like corny things that we all embrace. So please, get away from this checking in thing. In fact, somebody, I wish I could take credit for this. Somebody that I'm connected with once told me, because I was like going on about this whole checking in thing, and he said that, you know, like that checking in thing is only appropriate if you're calling your parole officer. So unless you're like trying to sell your parole officer, like, let's stop with the checking in thing. So the what I've really proposed here, aside from all the bloopers that I just had with the damn, like, Jack Welch, I mean, that was disastrous, by the way. Let's just all own that and try to work past it. The whole point here is that this is a brainstorming question that you either want to, like, ask of yourself with some quiet time and or ask it of your sales team. And the question is, again, in what ways can I or we stay in touch without calling to check in? That is number one. Let's move on to number two and pray that this podcast picks up, man, and like I don't butcher this shit out of a Jack Welch quote. The next thing that you want to think about would be, what venues are at my disposal in addition to phone and email? Let's say it again. And then, as my friend Ricky Ricardo would say, I'm going to do some splaining. So what venues are at my disposal in addition to phone and email? Ladies and gentlemen, most of us in sales cling way too tightly to phone and email. Now, every time I say that, there is some hardcore, like, wolf of effing Wall Street type who gets all kinds of shitty because they think what I'm saying is, don't pick up a phone, don't send an email. By all means, pick up a phone, send an email. But did you notice how I worded the question? I said, in addition to, which usually implies, like, don't, like disregard those things. It means in addition, above and beyond, to complement, to augment those other things. And you need to realize that phone and email are the noisiest channels. So, yes, use them. But what else, in addition to phone and email, could you be using? So I'm going to give you some thoughts on this one. Like I said, I'm also going to feed you a little bit here, too. And you don't have to agree with all of these. But if you disagree with them, I want you to then ask yourself the follow-up question, why do I disagree with these? Why wouldn't I do it? Because some of the best things that you could be doing in sales, believe it or not, and in life, are the things that make you uncomfortable. And if I might, let me share something with you that I just went through, because like you guys, I am also a humble card-carrying member of the sales profession, a humble student, if you will. And there's something that I was avoiding because it made me feel uncomfortable. And it was video. I was just really avoiding it for years. I mean, seriously, minimum of 4 to 5 years that I've been avoiding making videos. I remember each time I got a new iPhone, which was like, you know, every 2 years or whatever the heck it was. And I remember thinking, oh, great, man, this has a great video, you know, great camera on it, and I could, the quality of the video is really, really good. I can now start making videos. And I put it off, and I put it off, and I put it off. And it's something that I knew all along, especially when you're doing what I'm trying to do, which is position myself as a thought leader. That video is so important. In fact, those of you on LinkedIn, you notice, right? A lot of people are putting out videos, and I was missing that. And finally, one day, I said, you know, enough of this, man. I'm avoiding this because I'm being a wuss. Everything that I've ever done to grow my business initially gave me a level of discomfort. Starting, like, jumping into blogging, I was uncomfortable with it. But this year now is 10 years that I've been blogging. Initially, I was uncomfortable with LinkedIn. This year also happens to be 10 years with that. I was uncomfortable starting my podcast, this very podcast that you're listening to, and it's actually now 8 years ago this weekend that I started, because it was Memorial Day 2010 that I did it. So when I go through this list, if you find yourself automatically dismissing something, I want you to kind of ask yourself the question, why? And if your why is strong and it's a legitimate why, then okay, fair enough. But if it's really because you're not comfortable with it, I don't know. Unless you're hurting somebody, or this somehow what we're proposing here is, you know, you being an asshole to somebody, then I get it. Otherwise, I think everybody needs to you know, kind of toughen up a little bit and maybe try it. So the first thing that you might want to consider as far as venues might be snail mail. There's also FedEx. For those of you who have local prospects, drop-ins or a drop-off. How about your social networks? How about text messages? Now, I will tell you, anybody who knows me, again, knows that I am just not a fan of text messages. I find them to be very intrusive. But that is me. And nobody out there cares what makes me comfortable as a salesperson. What they care about is what makes them comfortable as the recipient. And you will find that everyone clings to a preferred method of communication. You'll have some that they're all about picking up a phone call. You set picking up the phone and making a phone call. You could send them an email, bang, you're getting a phone call. You'll have other people that they're all about face-to-face meetings. They want to have a meeting for everything. That's their way of doing things. Other people, they're all about social networks. In fact, I've often told the story of, in fact, now I'm up to about 3 clients that I have that do this, where they will only respond to me and reach out to me on social networks. They will not respond to phone calls unless we have an active project in the works. They will not respond to the other things, but they will begin a project with me and, like, you know, wanting to reach out. They begin kind of that process through one of the social networks. In fact, I have one client that we always laugh about it. She will start on Facebook because we're connected there. Then all of a sudden she'll like somehow continue that conversation over on LinkedIn. And it's just like bounce. And then ultimately it's an email. So I don't want you to hold back because of your comfort level. Now, the other thing that I just want to throw at you as far as why we're asking this question, what venues are at my disposal in addition to phone and email? Because what we want to establish in the sales cycle is your Uncle Paul's favorite word in the whole wide world. And if you've been listening for a while, you know what that word is. And the word is propinquity. We want to establish propinquity. And of course, what does it mean? It means nearness and closeness and kinship. And what I've added to the definition is sort of, you know, that bumping into someone on different venues, much like you would bump into a neighbor. In fact, let's think about that for a minute. I want you to think about a neighbor that you don't know really, really well, but they're that, like, wave at the fence type of neighbor. So now let's just say you're out for a walk. It's a beautiful time of year. You're out for a walk and you bump into the neighbor and you do what Larry David refers to as a stop and chat. You stop for a minute, how's everything? Beautiful day. Blah, 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 blah. And maybe that's what you do. You say blah, 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 blah. And, you know, everybody's on their way. But now let's say another time, because it's a local community, you've run into that neighbor at your favorite restaurant and you do a very quick stop and chat. And then maybe another time, and I'm not saying this is all like in the same day. That would be like really creepy. But yeah, maybe it's another time. And you run into that neighbor at the kid's soccer game or a sporting event, at the movies, it doesn't matter. And, like, what happens each time when you do the Stop and Chat? Well, it creates a deeper sense of familiarity with that person, a deeper sense of comfort. And so long as the interaction isn't weird, you are establishing that sense of propinquity. And that's what we need to be doing with potential clients, our prospects, our clients. We need to deepen that sense of propinquity. A lot of people love to say that, you know, in sales, it's all about, you know, people do business with people they know, like, and trust. Well, please understand, it's propinquity that serves as the accelerator to the know, like, and trust thing. So that's part of why you want to have different places that you're bumping into your potential clients. So that was suggestion number two. Suggestion number three, what flavors will I use in my follow-up communication? What flavors will I use in my follow-up communication? The reason why we're asking this question is that, sadly, most communication in sales, and especially on the follow-up, the flavor is basically, are you ready to buy? Or I'm just checking in to see if you're ready to buy. I'm just circling back to see if you're ready to buy. It's basically one flavor only. So I want you to think about flavors that might, and this is just like a partial list. You'll have to come up with some more on your own. But how can you make the communication maybe fun or appropriately funny? But other times, maybe the flavor needs to be more serious. More, it sounded like I added an S to the word serious there, didn't it? More serious. Maybe factual. Perhaps helpful. And again, I'm not saying, you know, check all these boxes in every single email. No, but just beware of kind of having, you know, it's a courtship that we're having here. I think, I'm sure you guys would agree. And even if you don't, I can't hear you. So just, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. We can't argue it, not today. But it's a courtship. But we can't expect to have a good courtship if we're having the same shitty date and the same shitty topic of conversation. So we need to mix it up a little bit. So that was number three. Number four. Question that I want you to ask of yourself, and if you do this with your sales team, ask it of the sales team. In what ways can I use repetition to reiterate either a pain point or an opportunity point? In what ways can I use repetition to reiterate a pain or opportunity point? And by the way, there's more to it. A pain point, opportunity point, and our solution to help them eliminate the pain and or embrace the opportunity. You need to think about that. In what ways can I use repetition? You see, repetition today, more than ever, I mean seriously, more than any other time in history, it is so critical. Because the average person with their attention spans, and you know, there was this report that was done by the BBC, and there's people who argue this as not being accurate. And it's one of those things that I don't know that, like, I care if it's accurate or not. I know that it's accurate enough. And the BBC did a study. It was probably 2010-ish around there. And they found that the attention span of the human race is now at about 8 seconds. A few years later, I want to guess somewhere around 2017, maybe 16, several people came forward and said, basically, that's incorrect. It really doesn't matter to me if the attention span is 8 seconds, it's 80 seconds, or it's 800 seconds. I'm here to tell you that it sucks. It's not good. We are in a multitasking world right now that even, and by the way, let me just get away from business and give you guys an example that I hope slams the point home. I don't know about you guys if you're into like people watching, not in a creepy way, but like up here in New York, we have lots of diners. So when I go out to a diner with Mrs. Uncle Paul, or maybe I go out for a drink or whatever it is, we love to just kind of watch people. It doesn't matter if it's a couple that I see or a family, I see phones out and people multitasking. And again, right about now, you'll always have somebody say, well, those are those millennials for you. It's not the millennials, folks. I mean, they're part of it. But, you know, I'm going to be 53 years old in about another month from now. It's my generation. I see baby boomers doing it. It is not a group of people that we can single out doing this. This is our society today, that we constantly have to be doing multiple things. But also, we have more noise than any other time in the history of the human race. And you guys have heard me, like, spew some of these stats, but Fast Company magazine says that average person is exposed to over 3,000 advertising messages per day. We know that, I think it was University of California at San Diego, says that we consume 34 gigabytes of information each and every day, which the visual representation of that is a novel and a half every single day, about 100,000 words that we're consuming. And I don't know, like about every 5 to 6 days or so, every few days, once a week or whatever, we're consuming the equivalent of War and Peace. So basically, imagine living in a world where you're reading War and Peace 50 times a year. That's a huge-ass book. 50 times you're doing it. Now, when you get done imagining it, I want you to realize that there's no need to have imagined it because you're living it every single day. So it means that it's easier today for people to just forget about you. And when they forget about you for even a few days, can that kill a deal? Now, that doesn't mean we should be insecure and we should be like up everybody's ass here like every second of the day. That's how you become like a real irritation to somebody. And see, I almost said something right there that really was completely inappropriate. And I just want you guys to know that in spite of the fact that I do say the S curse on here and I might be a tad irreverent, there are also many times, like just right now, that I also demonstrate just huge amounts of restraint out of respect for my audience. But that may not last too long. It's just, you know, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen on this podcast? But so what you need to do is you need to use repetition to reiterate pain points, things that really like had them perk up when they were talking about deficiencies or things that were lacking in their present service or operation, and how they lit up when they were talking about opportunities that they really hope to embrace in their business, or maybe things about your solution that could either make those things go away or help them embrace those opportunities faster. But the problem is that many sales reps, they look at the fact that, well, I said it in the demo, I said it in the presentation, it says so in the proposal, and they think that's good enough. It's not. You're not even scratching the surface there. So you need to think about what points need to be reiterated and in what ways can I reiterate them? How can I use repetition? But now there's another area that if you're driving in the car, I would strongly recommend that you pull over and you jot this down. But several times throughout the sales cycle, I don't mean once, like during the demo, I mean like repeatedly, you need to be supplying evidence. Now, the other like Uncle Paulism that I'm guilty of, aside from like every damn podcast mentioning the word propinquity. I mean, I feel like Sesame Street. Today's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast has been brought to you by the word propinquity, because Uncle Paul loves to say it a lot. I mean, seriously. But here's another Uncle Paulism that's almost up there with propinquity. HubSpot did a study, a survey, whatever the hell you want to call it. They did it last year, 2017. And they found that, you ready for this? This is not going to shock you, but you need to hear it. 97% of the population just really doesn't trust sales reps, right? So it's like basically, said another way, less than 3% trust sales reps. Now, you could sit here, again, we could argue these things, because every time, you know, somebody cites a study, we could find another one. that maybe contradicts that or whatever it is. But I'm here to tell you, like, when I really stop and think about what I've observed in sales, even the way I behave as a salesperson, and like I go into a store and somebody says, can I help you? And I do need the help. I say, no, I'm just looking. Because I just want to kind of feel it out. I want to observe that sales rep in his or her natural habitat. Kind of like the crocodile hunter. Remember that guy? Right, I was going to try to imitate him, but like I can't imitate people. But but you know, that kind of thing. So what we need to do is provide evidence. The whole point of evidence, and then I'll give you some examples of evidence, is to eliminate doubt and hesitation and skepticism. So again, it is to eliminate or at least reduce doubt and skepticism. And also, by the way, to hopefully head off an objection at the best possible time before it happens. How cool is that? So some forms of evidence would be things like providing facts. How about testimonials? And you guys know how I feel about testimonials. I don't mean these bullshit testimonials that are like, you know, like where somebody says all these great things and then like the name on it is Todd F., New York City. Like, what is that, right? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking, like, legit. And seriously, there's a lot of people who rant about shit and then they don't tell you how to do it right. If you ever want to, like, get my thoughts on how to do a testimonial right, you can certainly go to yoursalesplaybook.com/blog and, like, just, like, search for testimonials. Like, search for, like, posts on testimonials. You'll find at least half a dozen where I take you through it with a lot of specifics. But you can also look up my testimonials that are on the website. And you'll notice every one of them, it's like a full name. Like, as opposed to Richie D, you're going to see Richie DeMarco. Or, you know, Peter P. No, you're not going to see that on my website. You're actually going to see a president of an organization by the name of Pete Primo. Right? Like, use the actual name. I think they pack a lot more punch. So things like testimonials, you also should consider things like stats and studies. There are over 12 different forms of evidence that I teach, and I'm going to be teaching actually in our upcoming Closers Academy. That's going to be on June 1st. And June 8th right on your computer screen, and I'm actually going to be talking about that at the end of the podcast. That brings us now to number 5. In what ways can we keep the prospect engaged between meetings? In what ways can we keep the prospect engaged between meetings? Now, one of the ways that you can do it, and this is something that I just think is very, very powerful, is the use of homework. And the way that I go about using homework is at the end of an interaction, whether it be a meeting or a phone call or whatever it is. What I'll do is I will start by assigning homework to myself. And the reason why is that nobody will ever get mad at you when you give yourself shit to do. In fact, I would venture to say that the average person, decision maker, because I love to tell people what to do, they're going to give you a few things to do. And that's okay because they're falling right into it, right? Exactly into what I want them to do. So part of my evil scheme here, and it's not really an evil scheme, but so I start off and I'll say something like, Mary, now just one little note here. Don't ever call somebody like by the name of Tom or Bill or whatever. Don't call them Mary, right? Just make sure you get the name right. But like if I were talking to Mary and you were talking to Mary, you would say something like, Mary, you know, I obviously have my homework cut out for me. I need to do the following as my homework, right? Here's what I'm going to be doing. And I list what they are. And I put very specific timelines on it. I need to get you this by this date. I need to have a conversation with this person and get back to you by that date or whatever. So I just lay it out. But then what I do is I say, okay, Mary, fair is fair. That's my homework. There's a few homework items for you. Number one, if you could do this by this date. Now, is it, you know, reasonable to assume that you'll be able to get it done by this date? Because, see, I can't do those two action items that I had my homework until I hear back from you on those things. That then I can run with it from there and you're done or whatever. So I give them their homework items. Now, the reason why we assign homework, there's several reasons, is to keep them engaged between meetings, but also I think it's a great way for them to test drive what a relationship, a working relationship with you would look like. And if you can provide that for them, it might be just the thing that kind of helps somebody lean to your side of the fence versus your competitors. I also think that what it does is it just kind of levels the power in a meeting. And what it does is it just it makes for a more collaborative relationship. I really don't believe in relationships where any one side is dictating all the terms and whatever. But last but not least, and I can go on about the benefits of homework, last but not least, it gives you an early warning sign if someone is disengaging. If you have a due date for homework from somebody of, say, this Tuesday, and Tuesday comes and goes, you now can immediately kind of, now you can kind of separate and say, okay, this is the moment where either they got busy or they disengaged, and you can get right back in there. As opposed to waiting until you get the no or they disappear from you in the sales cycle. I would rather know the minute that they might be losing interest or maybe something else came up or momentum is being lost. So we do it for that. But the other way, and there's lots of ways that we can keep people engaged, is by asking a well-thought-out question between meetings. One of the best ways for you to get responses in any type of communication, whether you're prospecting, you're leaving a voicemail message, you're sending an email to a potential client, and certainly during the sales cycle when they're considering you and you're reaching out to a prospect, is asking questions. And again, every one of these things that I'm going over today, you can also ask yourself, okay, if I do this, what venue can I, or venues, what I consider as far as communication? So I can call you up and ask you a question. Other times, maybe what I can do is I could send you an email. If you're active on LinkedIn and we are kind of communicating a lot over there, I might do it over there or whatever. If you're a person who you prefer text messages, then maybe I can go that route or whatever. The only thing that I would be cautious of is if there, and by the way, like two things I would be cautious of. I mean, don't ask a question for the sake of asking somebody a question, like a bullshit question. Like I wouldn't do that. You're wasting someone's time and they're not going to entertain that too long. Especially one of the things I've noticed, and perhaps you have too, C-level people, they don't have a lot of patience for shit. They really don't. And they're very quick to guard their time. And when they see that you're wasting their time, they're going to lose a lot of respect for you. And unless like they're bleeding and you have the tourniquet and it has to be like that bleeding has to stop right now, they're going up the road. So you have to be very, very careful of that. So a well-placed question is very, very important. So you have to be aware of the type of question, but you should also be aware of if it's a really important question, you might want to keep that communication all in one spot, because if you're trying to retrace steps or go back and reference something, and now you have communication across LinkedIn and you have it across text messaging as well as email, well, that's a pain in the ass. You need to have everything all in one spot. So something to think about. And then last but not least here is you really need to continually have a communication map that is premeditated. And what do I mean by a communication map? A communication map is something that we have in place so that when we're not doing seat of your pants type of communication, the average sales rep, I don't care if you're hunting a deal and, you know, like trying to get in front of somebody for the first time, or you're in a deal and you're trying to get that deal across the finish line, a lot of sales reps, they're excellent at setting the little alerts, right? That's really important, set an alert. But what they're horrible at is like premeditating the communication. In other words, that alert goes off and either while their like hand is going for the phone or their fingers are going for the keyboard, they're deciding what they're going to say in that moment. And a lot of us, right, like we're witty in sales and we're sharp and like we're real quick on responses and comebacks and all that. But I don't care how good you are at that, it will pale in comparison. That the quality of that communication will pale in comparison when you put it up against premeditated and communication that's been thought out and planned and pre-planned. So here's what I would recommend that you do. Certainly at the beginning of the whole sales cycle, when you have that initial meeting or whatever it is, you're going to map out your communication. So in other words, like, and let me just give you like one or two basic things just to get the thought process going, because there's a lot to this. So what you're going to do is after your meeting, you're going to perhaps, okay, you're going to take some time in the car, not in their parking lot, because that looks just odd. Like, just drive up the road, or like if you guys are doing like what I do, a lot more of an inside sales model, then certainly after that call, allow time between your calls to do what I'm proposing here. You're going to think out what your next steps are going to be, the homework and everything else, and that's going to guide you. So a basic thing, when somebody is nice enough to like take up their time to meet with me, I remember my manners, and I'm very big on sending a handwritten thank you. So that might be communication point number one. I send that out right away, and I figure that with the mail, it's going to get there anywhere from 48 to 72 hours later. So that might be the very first point that we consider. The second thing that I do, and I do it the same day as the appointment, actually by the next day, rather, I'm sorry. I kind of prepare it the same day because everything's nice and fresh and I can remember everything. What I do is the next day, I send out a meeting recap. And there's a lot of reasons why I do that. I'm not going to get into them now, but I promise you, I'm not just doing it to let people know I heard them and because it's proper business etiquette. There are actually some psychological reasons why I send a recap. And by the way, and if you want to learn more about that, well, you could either join us for the Closers Academy program that's coming up, or if you want to just get like just a real quick high level overview of what I mean by like the importance of a recap, if you go to yoursalesplaybook.com/blog and you like search through some of the blog posts right around this time, May 27th. I think I did it probably the 23rd or something like that. Or you could just search on yoursalesplaybook.com/blog. You can search recap and you'll find it. But the recap is very, very important why we do it. So that's now the second day. But now that's just like, you know, like the first few days. What, you know, when am I going to maybe follow up with a question? When am I going to maybe send something in the mail? When am I going to send them a LinkedIn invite if we haven't connected yet or whatever? When am I going to do something that's maybe creative, fun, or funny, or lighthearted? When am I going to send along some additional evidence? When am I going to send along perhaps an idea or something helpful or a resource? Maybe in there it would be appropriate for me to do some matchmaking and introduce them to someone to kind of show goodwill and maybe work a psychological tactic that we refer to as reciprocity. So those are some things, but you have to decide what your communication map is going to look like. So there you have it, folks. Six things that you can do in between meetings. Now, if this appealed to you, and you'd like to get more specifics and get into like those 12 forms of evidence that I mentioned and a complete communication map, because I actually have several ways that I keep in touch between meetings to stay top of mind and also, in a good way, influence them making the right decision. And when I say the right decision, I mean, I'd like to think it would be choosing me, but sometimes there are cases like it could be something so specialized that I would not be the best choice for them. I do some things sometimes in different languages. Specifically, we did some kick-ass training for a company where it had to be in Spanish. We did a great job. I can't speak it to save my life. Like I would translate shit like really, really bad. I'd end up by like calling everybody's mother a goat or some shit like that. It would be bad. But I have a good friend of mine that worked with me at Dale Carnegie. And she's bilingual. And we created, you know, a killer program for a company. But if somebody now came along and said they needed something in French or whatever it is, I probably wouldn't be your guy to do that. I mean, seriously, it's just not something that I'm strong at. But what I want to be able to do is be there to be the person whispering in their ear in a helpful way, not a sleazy, manipulative way, as opposed to my competitors. Now, if this appealed to you, what I want you to know is that, like, we're on a very serious deadline now. It is now May 27th. We are days away from me having to shut down registration for our upcoming Closers Academy course. We kick off this Friday, June 1st at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, and timeout. I am calling timeout on that. Anybody who just heard that and said, oh man, I got a thing and I'm busy, or like if you're like one of these lazy asses that doesn't want to do shit on Fridays or whatever it is, I got you covered. I want you to sign up anyway. Not just so you can like donate to the Uncle Paul Foundation here, which wouldn't be bad, by the way. I mean, seriously. I'm not so young, but I still need the money. But seriously, like, the reason why is because, like, I record every one of my sessions. I've been doing it since, like, 2012. So if you cannot attend something live, we send the replay out to everyone, regardless, whether you say, I can attend it live or not. There's some people who actually like to do both, but this is truly a go-at-your-own-pace type of thing. So in session one, let me tell you what we're going to be talking about. We're going to talk about the pre-appointment packet that you need to send out, like, to every prospect. Like, the moment you set that first appointment, this needs to be FedExed to them. We're going to talk about a template that will allow you to take immediate control. Remember, when I say take control, this is not for evil. This is not being sleazy. I mean where you can direct this person in a way that they are making a decision that is the best decision. And remember what I said before, it's not always going to be the best decision you, but you want to guide them toward making that decision. But also, we're going to talk about 12 tactics that safeguard your deal from obstacles, stalls, and objections. 5 types of questions that you need to be asking throughout your like sales cycle. Now, when it comes to questions, I'm really, really passionate about one thing. I think that there is far too much material out there saying you need to ask open questions and close probes and all that. That to me, if I were a sales rep and a sales trainer came in the room, I would have the shittiest poker face. Honestly, it's like you don't need a sales trainer to teach you that shit. You can go on Google right now, Google that, open questions and closed questions and all that kind of stuff, and you will probably get 2 million results. And there you go. Boom. It's done. I don't want to take that approach. So when I say I have 5 types of questions for you, these are 5 kick-ass types of questions that we've been able to test and use. And I use in my own selling efforts. So in addition to that, I have a PDF with 100 sales questions to kind of guide you and give you samples of these types of questions. We're going to talk about how to disqualify competitors without bad-mouthing them. Session 2 is going to be June 8th. And again, these both start at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. We're going to talk about one question to ask before you present solutions. And it's a question that saves a lot of time and gets people right to where they need to be, but it's non-negotiable. You really have to ask this question. 3 things to include in your proposals that your competitors aren't going to, they're not going to do. So again, it's going to help you stand out from them, which is very important, especially when you're running neck and neck. We're going to talk about how to keep the discussion from going prematurely to price. And that happens a lot in sales cycles. Wait, time out. How much is this going to cost me? So how do we regain control of that conversation without blowing off the conversation, without being manipulative or like giving them like a political answer that doesn't answer the question? You guys know what I'm talking about. We're going to talk about how to ask for the business without getting salesy. Then, you know, in an ideal world, that would be enough, right? You guys make the sale. We love Castain. Best $199 that I've ever spent in my life. But let's be real. Still, we live in a world where people might push back and they might want to negotiate. They might tell you your price is too high, need you to sharpen the pencil. So we've got a portion of this training where you're going to learn how to negotiate like a pro. And then finally, we're going to talk about something that no sales trainer that I know of really addresses. And if they address it, they really don't address it properly as far as what I've seen. And it's, well, what do you do if this stuff doesn't work and you get a big fat no? I mean, seriously, I mean, I do this for a living. I've been in sales now for 35 years this summer. It's 35 years, and people still tell me no. So what do you do when you're told no that can keep you in the game to maybe get a yes down the line? Because I really do believe that no is more like a not now. But we have to be able to go about it properly. Otherwise, things get weird. And people just stop returning your calls, and now you're hounding them and being a pain in the ass. And you know, it sounds like now that you're just like a poor sport and sore loser, and you're bad mouthing the shit out of your competitors and everything else. So we're going to talk about that. And of course, how we can put all this stuff that I'm going to teach you into a communication map. So if you guys want in, you got to move fast, because we're going to be pulling the plug on this really, really soon so that we can focus on all the people who have enrolled in it. If you want to learn more, please visit yoursalesplaybook.com/closemore. But wait, I almost forgot something. Holy crap. I almost forgot something really, really important. So if you want to come and join us for this, absolutely. Go to yoursalesplaybook.com/closemore. I'll take you through more of the details. But if you are a sales manager, or if you'd like to pass along this message to your sales manager, if you have a sales team with at least 6 people on it, you only pay for 5 people and you get a free 30-minute team call. So let me say this again. If you have at least 6 people on your team, you're only going to pay for 5, and you get a free 30-minute team call. So I don't care if you have 20 people on your team, you have 200 people on your team, 2,000 people on your team. You're only going to pay for 5 people, and you're going to get a free 30-minute team call. The topic is completely up to you guys. Whatever it is you want to talk about, you want me to come in and talk about something that was in the program and do like a Q&A with you guys, I'll do it. You need me to come in and you want me to talk about prospecting, you got it. You want me to talk about LinkedIn, no problem. I got you covered. So it's a nice, inexpensive way for you guys to do it. And by the way, I really don't care, again, if you're putting in 20 people or 200 people or 2,000 people. Each and every one of them will get the email support that I give everyone in my program. So I don't want you to think, because you're putting a massive amount of people in, that I'm not going to be available to your team. One of the things that I do differently with my webinars is that I'm also available to you guys afterwards. And I think that's a critical time, if you think about it. That time when, like, you're going through your notes and you're like, you know, it kind of made sense at the time. I wish the guy was around so, like, he could answer this question. Or maybe you want to bounce an idea off of me that is webinar, you know, course related type of stuff. I'm here for you. So it's not like I'm going to say, well, sorry, got to wait till the webinar's on. The support is there. So if you want to take advantage of the team deal that I have in place, where you only pay for 5 and you could put your entire team in and get a free 30-minute team call, all you have to do is email me, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. The catch is that you got to do it fast, because I'm not going to have much time as the week goes on to be able to do this. And I'm going to have to pull that deal, because I'm not going to be able to put it together for you. And the logistics of getting a bunch of people enrolled, it's not going to be able to happen last minute. So you need to do this as early in the week as possible. If you're just interested in joining us for the program, then certainly go to yoursalesplaybook.com/closemore. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am inviting you to visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.